Thank you and welcome to Scripture on Creation. I'm Scott Kump.
And I'm Dr. Ben Scripture.
Dr. Scripture, in our program today, you're going to consider a question from a listener, and we're going to hear his question in his own words.
Yes, Scott. This message has been on my answering machine for over 6 months, but I've left it on there because I really have wanted to address it, because in my mind, it brought up several interesting ideas. I've just not gotten around to talking about them on the program. So with my apologies, Jerry Colt, for taking so long, let's hear his question.
This is Jerry Colt from Georgia, former Hoosier. I listened to your program, and I would like to know if there was honeybees on the ark. An avid beekeeper, and of course I'm going to think of bee questions, but someone asked me one day, and I can't find it exactly in the scriptures, but maybe you guys can.
So first, I want to sincerely thank Jerry for calling with his question. Although I can understand how he may feel like I surely didn't care much, as evidenced by my delay in answering it. But in response to the question, were there bees on the ark? Since we obviously enjoy the honeybee, and more so the fruit of its labors.
Yes.
One, they certainly survived the flood, and two, they very likely were on the ark.
Okay, now Dr. Scripture, as Jerry pointed out, he could not find anything in the Bible that indicated honeybees were on the ark. Have you found something he must have missed?
No, Scott, and so let's make that clear. What I'm going to propose is not based on a passage in the Bible which directly says bees were on the ark. And frankly, since Jerry said he was a beekeeper, he would have more information than I have about the life cycle of honeybees. But I do know they require a queen to lay the eggs, the worker bees tend to, and the whole social order of bees takes place in a hive. So I suppose it was possible that some hives, for example, they may have been in some trees, managed to float on a mat for the duration of the flood. And I think we should definitely understand lots of insects would have survived that way, either through unhatched eggs or larvae. But in the case of honeybees, I would assume that honey was something that Noah not only knew about, but enjoyed as a tasty, nutritious treat. And surely he and the people who lived in the days before the flood knew where honey came from.
Now, Dr. Scripture, I don't want to get off track, but is honey mentioned before the flood in Genesis 7? I mean, the promised land being a land flowing with milk and honey is repeated over and over in Exodus and beyond.
Well, that's a good question, Scott. I did search for the mention of honey before the flood and did not find it. But of course, that doesn't mean it wasn't present or even well known. And given what a valuable substance it surely would have been, do you think the pre-flood people would have figured out how to cultivate or manage honeybee hives to have easier access to it?
Well, we've often discussed that ancient man was extremely intelligent and ingenuitive, so I suppose there'd be a good chance of that.
I agree. And if that were the case, I think surely Noah would have taken a hive on the ark. So although we can't say that with certainty, it seems likely bees were on the ark, as well as the possibility could have existed for hives to have made it by floating on large vegetative mats during the flood. But Scott, as I thought about this whole question of honeybees on the ark, it got me thinking about something I'd never thought about before with respect to the building of the ark and the conditions on it during its construction.
I'd also imagine seeing the ark at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky may help with those ideas too.
Well, absolutely. When you witness the size and what would have had to have been the complexity of the ark, by seeing it there at the Ark Encounter, you realize how extensive a construction project it would have been. And although we don't know how long it took Noah to build it, it surely was a project that took many decades. So, imagine this massive structure made of wood out in the open, being inhabited by all kinds of creatures, which surely would have included a lot of different kinds of insects.
You know, I knew Noah was not dumb enough to actually take mosquitoes on the ark.
Well, you know, I know that's funny, but think of it. Even though Noah was to take two of every kind on the ark, many other creatures apparently came to him. But over decades of time, there must have been all kinds of creatures using the Ark as a place to live. I mean, it wasn't a sterile environment.
And I'm pretty sure Noah didn't go around with insecticide, even if Mrs. Noah didn't like bugs.
So, as I said, Scott, I'd never considered that dynamic of the ecosystem that would have been the Ark. As it was being built for 40, 50, even 60 years, it would have had spiders and beetles and ants. Just imagine, it would have just been full of all kinds of, especially insects, possibly even a beehive or two.
Okay, but I still wish Noah would have swatted those mosquitoes.
Me too. But, you know, mosquitoes have their place in the environment too. They're just not near as pleasant as honeybees. On the other hand, let's remember, honeybees are not all sugar and spice and everything nice. They can give a pretty painful sting.
True.
So again, I want to thank Jerry for his question, and I hope these things we've discussed give him some new ideas to consider. His question for sure got me thinking about some things I'd never thought of before.
Okay, Dr. Scripture, we still have some time in our program today. Do you have another question from a listener you'd like to address?
Well, yes, I do. And this was a question I got from a listener several months ago as well. However, I did respond back to him via email shortly after I received his letter. But I just decided to talk about it on the radio program today. It's a question related to Noah's flood, similar to the honeybee question. So, Scott, I'll ask you to read the question.
Dr. Scripture, before I read the question, I wanted to clarify. Are you saying you respond to every listener question, whether or not you entertain it on the radio?
You know, I do try. But since a lot of times I get the same question several times, I'm not going to repeat it every time on the radio program. But I try to answer all the emails.
Okay, so this email is from Wayne Joslin, and he writes, "Hello, I listen regularly to your program on the Harbor Light Radio Network of the Windwards every Monday morning from 7:15 to 7:30.
That's great.
Yeah, according to Genesis 9, 13, and 14, God said, I would place my bow in the clouds. While I was watering my plants this morning, I observed a beautiful reflection of a rainbow in the water droplets from the garden hose. So I looked up in the sky and there were no clouds. The reflection was only visible while I was facing north at a right angle to the sun, and the hose was at a right angle to me facing west with the sun behind the water droplets. When I saw the rainbow, I was excited. My question is the bow in the sky even when there are no clouds? And for a rainbow to occur, there just needs to be the right conditions like water vapor or mist?"
Well, thanks for your question, Wayne, and thanks for listening there in the Windwards, as they're called. Scott, you know what the Windwards refer to, don't you?
I think so. They're the islands in the eastern part of the Caribbean Sea, right?
Very good. Can you name any of them?
Oh, I didn't know I was going to have to take a geography quiz today. I would have studied. Well, let's see. Since the Harbor Light Network broadcasts in Trinidad, Tobago, and Grenada, I would guess they are at least part of the Windward Islands.
That's a good guess. And I think they also include Martinique and Barbados and even some others. But see, you didn't need to study. But to answer Wayne's question, I did need to study some.
Oh, really? What about?
Well, I wanted to be sure I knew the physics behind the phenomenon of bending or refracting light, as it's called, because that's what happens when a rainbow forms. So to answer Mr. Jocelyn's question about rainbows, when light shines through water vapor, it passes through, basically we would say, undisturbed, so that the different wavelengths of the colors of light do not separate. But when there are enough water molecules clumping together to form droplets, like in mist or rain, when the light passes through the droplets, those droplets act as a prism, bending some wavelengths of light, you might say, apart from other wavelengths, and a specific wavelength, in other words, a specific color of light, emerges from the water droplet. So, as white light, which includes all the wavelengths of light, passes through a huge mass of water droplets, all the different wavelengths are refracted, and we can see the different colors. That is a rainbow.
Dr. Scripture, that seems strange that when all the wavelengths of light are combined, it looks white. But when you mix all the colors of paint, for example, it ends up looking black. Why is that?
Scott, I don't know.
Oh.
But it demonstrates the difference between light, which is a wave, and everything else. Mm. Now, to further address Wayne's question, to see a rainbow, it does depend on the angle of light to the water droplets and to you. So, in the example of his garden hose spray, to see the light that was bent as it passes through the droplets, you had to be at the proper angle between the sun and the mist. So, it's true, actual clouds don't need to be visible, but usually in the sky, when there are raindrops at the same time the sun is shining through them, there are clouds in the sky.
Isn't it thought that Noah probably would not have seen a rainbow before God put it in the sky after the flood? And that's because it probably didn't rain before the flood?
You know, that's an interesting possibility about rainbows before and after the flood. It may not have rained on earth until the flood. So could it be that Noah had never seen a rainbow, at least in the sky, before the event recorded in Genesis 9? You know, Scott, we're talking about what God said when he made the rainbow covenant. I think we should read it, those verses there in Genesis chapter 9.
Okay, I'll start reading at Genesis 9:12. And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all successive generations."
Verse 13, "I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a sign of a covenant between me and the earth."
Verse 14, "And it shall come about when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow shall be seen in the cloud."
So, a rainbow in the sky was probably something completely new to Noah. Because remember, water vapor doesn't form a rainbow. You've got to have water droplets, and there's a good chance that it didn't rain before the flood. However, it's very possible that Noah could have seen smaller rainbows, like Wayne saw, for example, in the mist from a waterfall or from some other situation where water would be spraying and splashing, throwing droplets in the air with the light coming directly from behind.
How many of us have seen a rainbow in a sprinkler?
Right. Now, I don't know that Noah would have had to have used a sprinkler because they had automatic irrigation from the ground. And of course, that's one of the reasons why it's considered that rain didn't happen before the flood and in fact wasn't even necessary for cultivation and for farming to actually take place. In any event, isn't it interesting that God made something so beautiful from something so tragic?
Like insects that sting you but also create a delicious treat.
That's a great example. Rainbows and bees. Rainbows, another example of the beauty God created within the heavens and earth to glorify himself as well as to bring us joy as we observe creation's beauty. So it makes you sort of wonder, all the references to the land flowing with milk and honey, is there going to be milk and honey in the millennium as well as rainbows? We've talked about this recently. If the conditions on earth return to essentially pre-flood conditions during the millennium, maybe there won't be rainbows. But I got to sort of believe that there'll be rainbows when Christ returns and rules the earth. Because one thing we know for certain, there won't be another flood during the millennium, because the Lord said, "And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your descendants after you." And that's not what I say, that's what Scripture says.